There's a code of silence, and it can't go on.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix.
And we're still living through it. You know, things don't happen just by themselves on any level. Like Plato said, you can't allow it to happen spontaneously if it's not authorized, whatever change it might be. He said, in fact, Plato wanted even musicians, not just actors and playwrights and dramas, to be licensed, but musicians as well, he said, because music can be, even then, can be used to stir the warlike abilities innate within, especially young males. So music had always been used for warlike purposes. It gets the blood up and you get your happy warlike songs on the go, and away you go. But also, you could create discontent through anything that would attract the youth. It's hard to get the youth to sit and say, let's have a, here they are on a nice island, eh? One of the Grecian islands, eh? And there's a school of philosophy. And beautiful weather, right? You've got a lovely blue skies and that deep blue, greenish, azure colour, I guess they call it, of the sea, and a nice warm breeze, eh? And you're having a great time yourself, if you're wealthy. And this is philosophy school, and your dad wants you to go there, you see? And he's paid this philosopher X amount of bucks to, because, I mean, that's where school comes from. Is the word is from a Greek word meaning leisure. So you need leisure to go to school, because the rest of the folk were too busy keeping the wealthy elite in comfort. And so they didn't have time to go to school. But here you are, as I say, here's this philosophy school saying, yada, yada, yeah, you know, and let's don't just, what's the meaning of life, eh? And then it breaks off into 1,000 different ideas, and everybody's arguing, and you get dialectics going, and all that kind of stuff. And you could either sit there for all day, waiting for all, or would, have you heard someone playing a fancy little instrument, so maybe a harp, eh? And singing some song that would get their foot tapping. Well, I guarantee you, any little boys and girls there would suddenly be over it, especially someone their own age, you see. It doesn't matter if someone's created them as an idol to follow, as they've always done in the music business. But as long as they think it's theirs, and they're talking about, yeah, we're going to have our talking about our generation, right? And that rebellion and tapped in that. So sure, you can actually. So what they're going to choose? What are you going to do? So listen to some boring old philosopher, or go and listen to this guy singing about the injustices of life and all the things he'd love to, and how angry he was because his hormones are jumping in, and he doesn't know how to control things. So he's angry about everything and yada yada yada. And so they can all kind of relate to that, and away they go. Well, that technique's always been used, and Plato talked about it, that they should actually be licensed, because it's a dangerous thing to society, for the stability of society. Quite amazing, really, eh? When you think about it, even way back then, that Plato himself had to flee Greece in Athens, eh? He had to flee for quite a few years after Socrates died. And Socrates was his mentor, you know, and he was a mentor to quite a few philosophers, actually. And Aristotle, too. But Socrates was often put across to the public as being someone that they just picked on. He was just too bright for them, you know. And he had these outrageous ideas and so on and blah, blah, blah. But it was much, and he was asked to drink the hemlock. That was his sentence. That was his punishment. Well, his punishment, actually, if you look into the records that they talked about, was that he himself was teaching people, or the students, to become like almost like an army, for insurrection against their parents. Old techniques are still getting used today, in your face today, actually, very open. The students don't know it, but if anybody else outside is watching can see it. And so Socrates died, and Plato and a bunch of them fled in case they got hunted down, because the ideas that had been taught and the techniques that had been taught of recruitment, training, and so on were dangerous to the establishment of Greece at that time, or Athens. And you really think about it, I think that was probably a common thing that would happen in different countries, actually. The more advanced, the more it would happen at the time. But Plato did understand. That's why he talked about licensing afterwards when he came back, and he got a good position of power himself. He understood that what he'd been taught himself, the power of art, music, some poetry, and stage plays. Fascinating stuff, really, when you think about it. So nothing really changes. It's very powerful, a powerful, powerful tool. I can remember going to high school, and in the first week I was there, some of the younger teachers there, some of these guys that were just before class started, there were two or three of them in the class, just meeting, I guess, before the bell went off. And we're all sitting there waiting for the bell to go off, but they were chatting about music at the time. And they were having a debate about who the best female vocalists were at the time and who was getting pushed. They were having a kind of little spat about who the best female vocalists were. But when I listened to them, it wasn't so much how good they were. It was they knew, they were very left-wing, and they knew that the techniques were going to be pushed in the songs and had been put across in their songs were kind of revolutionary-type songs. And they understood that they wanted to change everything, always for a socialist cause, supposedly for this equality idea, you know, this strange idea of equality that's never existed, even in the communist countries. But again, people who were that same age, they were the right age, young, you know, they were teachers, and they still thought that everything was wrong, and no doubt a lot was wrong. But they didn't know the reasons for things all being wrong. They didn't know they themselves were getting programmed by a system that already controlled the culture industry. Very important. Like Gramsci said too. Gramsci was the communist who taught some of the big communists, actually. And he said, and communism really is very, very old, an old idea. Especially the type that proliferated in eventually in the 1800s, but it sort of pre-existed for quite some time. But Gramsci said and wrote about it, how to take over cultures, step by very Fabian in a sense, until the culture is yours. You see, you've conquered it without them even realizing it, and that's the most powerful one of all. Now, with all the universities you've got, and throughout the 20th century into the present century, teaching this kind of thing, and some of the higher courses too, that they go into politics and social sciences, but they went into the Leninist idea and also the Marxist ideas and the helpers, and they were all cognizant of Gramsci's teachings, which mean that they understood. They obviously understood that a lot of what he had taught already had already happened, and they were all for it, because the socialistic values or the Marxist values permeated all strata eventually of society, and eventually when the upper elite come down with it too, the pretty well won. That's when you see society breaking down, because the old values are things that kept folk strong and wary against outsiders or any philosophy coming in to destroy as a weapon of war. You'd spot them. Well, those folk were gone then. You see, their own offspring had become so softened that they now were defenseless as well. And that's what you're seeing across a lot of the US at the moment as well. And the folk don't know it, but it was well planned and orchestrated. But yeah, think about Plato at times. It's quite fascinating to look into the ancient times and realize that some of these schools were teaching the overthrow of the parents. And again, some of the schools and the Socrates had and others ones had too, in this kind of loose brotherhood, you might call it. We're all teaching the same thing. They brought young females in too. Some of them became almost like agents of modern spy agencies. They literally were told how to eventually, how to seduce the older politicians, if you like, and the important nobility of ancient Greece, and maybe even get hitched up to them, but definitely to influence them into a certain direction. I mean, it's fascinating, really, you see how nefarious society has always been, in a way, and the human mind, especially when it comes to power and politics, the human mind knows no bounds.
Last night's talk was about the culture creation industry. An industry which has always really been there. Plato talked about it a long time ago, in that ordinary people, normal people, have certain things which go to create a culture, their customs, if you like, their rituals, their belief systems, their mode of dress, their dancing, singing. All of those things go up to make a culture. He also said that culture was created from the top down. In other words, it was authorized by an elite. He understood, being a member of the aristocracy, that thoughts which can become ideas, and if expressed properly by someone who can put the thought into words easily understood, which motivate the people, could get out of hand and an elite could lose control. He wanted the arts, the major arts, drama, music, and fashion for clothes, even some poetry, to be licensed. He understood the power to motivate people through emotion.
And you had all examples of it eventually, once the Soviet Union supposedly fell. They didn't fall, they just moved on. That's what Gorbachev said too, to the Politburo in his speech. He said, we're moving it out into the world now, to the next phase. With the cooperation of the West, of course it was, the ones who ruled the West. Anyway, these teachers were there and they're saying, yeah, it's our time now. And just like you see the Antifa, it's our time now, they were saying to themselves. And they were, of course, they had gone through college and teacher training, and they come out as good little communists. And they talked about how they were using the power of music then too. And one of them said, you know, his favourite was Dusty Springfield. And then they had a little debate and argument about who's the better type, Dusty Springfield and the Springfield group at the time, I think that, Sandy Shaw, you know. And they get kind of hostile towards each other. It's the instantly formed groups. I'm all for Sandy Shaw, and no, Dusty Springfield's got a better voice. And Yaddy. They literally thought that in this day of Bob Dylan, you know, and revolution, you know, the time is the era changing idea. They literally thought they were part of it and it was theirs. They really did think that. I knew better. I was a little younger than them. I knew better. I says, come on here. Don't they know that these are all picked people to help change society on behalf of it? I knew it then. It was obvious to me. The BBC at the time, only ever recruited the people on television and who worked in the higher level jobs and for television too, not even necessarily on camera. They were all from Eton at one time. That's how rigorous it was. The same places they would pull for their intelligence services for MI5 and 6. Because you control people's minds through whatever propaganda you're going to give and whatever entertainment you're going to give them. So here's your British government's system, the government system, giving you Top of the Pops and things like that, with the infamous Jimmy Savile, where groups that were suddenly famous, with the big famous making machine, you see, the big machine that makes you famous, who went on with no leads, no guitars or anything at the time. You wouldn't even have time to set up, honestly, if you had the real gear there. And they'd mime, but the teeny boppers didn't know. And it was all for the sexual revolution as well. So you had a sexual... don't forget the words revolution where it was used. Sexual revolution. What do you think that is? Did you see people in the streets say, we demand to have sex? No, you didn't have that. Folk had always had sex. It just depends on the context that you had it, you know, and what you did with any offspring about it. That's what it was about too. But someone else at the very, very top was promoting a new system. Sex, drug and rock and roll, eh? Sex, drugs and rock and roll. And that's what they give you. And actually, you aren't going to think too straight if you're on drugs. And you won't make good decisions in any possible way. And it was well put out there and tested upon the public. And it worked awfully well. It did work awfully well. But it was amazing to hear the people thinking they're part of some revolutionary movement, you know? Yeah, it's our music, you know, like the Who talking about my generation. Yeah. It was all put out by show business on behalf of those who ruled to make youngsters think they were part of something. And that it was their movement. Oh, it's our time now, you know. Quite something, eh? Quite something. But most folk never catch on. As I say, Plato said it. He said it. Nothing. Everything that in society was so rigorously managed and detailed and recorded in society, even in ancient Greece. He said that even anything to do with music or plays as well, and that plays mandated that they had to go, you had travelling troubadours and plays that would go around the different Athenian provinces and islands and get performances and get paid by the state to do it, because this is before Christianity, a lot of it, remember, and when Christianity had its early passion plays, like religious plays, Rome had other plays that were doing with emotions and systems and all the rest of it. And they were mandated. They had to be performed. And everybody had to attend to watch it. Because plays, just like movies today, really, really affect society. Oh my, did you see so-and-so? What do you think of that then? And your emotions get played with like crazy if it's a good play or a good movie. And you come away with opinions that the creators wanted you to have. And Plato knew this, and he says everything has to be authorized from the top. Including youngsters at that time putting up music back then. He says, because music can either create revolutions. This is you know, thousands of years ago. You know. Over 1,000 years ago. Over 2,000 years ago, what I'm saying. And that's what he said. And he says, we have to keep a tab on them all, like what, an eye on them. He says, and literally license them, because they can help foment revolutions. And that's how strictly guided the whole thing was and monitored and managed, you see. There's nothing we're doing today that we didn't know back then, except today it's much more perfected. And the studies upon the human mind and how you'll behave and react are so well predictable. Predictably managed, actually, by those who put the stuff out for you. And the instant feedback they get on everything to see if something's working on your mind. So many thousands admitted today that they would probably go this way too or do that. It's very predictable and very accurate, because folk don't think for themselves. Even when street theatre... big street, I'm talking about massive street theatre is being managed in front of your eyes. Because then I've talked so many times about the scientists, as I say, that boards and boards of specialists in different areas of the mind, basically the human mind, society, sociology, and so on, and ethnology, anthropology. And they literally work full-time, thousands of think tanks across the whole world, on us, on how to get us from here to there, basically, by giving us new ways to behave, to think, all given to you by experts on television, or even through fiction, too, because you adopt the characters that are the heroes or heroines in fiction, but you identify with them. That's why you always have the male and the female, and other kinds nowadays, too. But anyway, that's how it's done. It's very, very simple. We adopt other people's attitudes when it's repetitive. That's not all you need to is repetition. And we're bombarded with many different memes and so on constantly now. They come out from the mainstream to start with, and then into the movies, even into novels and so on, over and over again until our behaviour is modified and we actually act out our behaviour in the way it's designated for us to follow. So we're so apt to do this, and it's always been this way, actually. Even in ancient Greece, used to have travelling players that came from the Levant area, even across all of ancient Greece. And it was mandatory at times that everyone had to go and watch these plays, because they were often called moral plays and so on. But it was for the updating of what the kings and the leaders wanted them, the people, to behave like and dress like too, by the way. Because even music at one point almost got licensed in ancient Greece, because Plato said that it could foment agitation amongst the young and have them rebel. Now, he wasn't against it technically, because he himself was part of a revolutionary cult that was there to foment revolution. And when Socrates had to drink his poison, he found that other members of his school had toddled off elsewhere to be out of the way for a long time, and Plato happened to be one of them. And Plato was really charged with trying to corrupt the youth, because very similar to previous cults that came out of Egypt, in fact, or that area, they tried to foment revolution by undermining the moral states of the young and getting them to rebel and kick out the nobility and so on, so that a new group could come in and take over. This is still going on today, by the way, the same technique. Anyway, getting back to what I'm talking about here, it's to do with how quickly we adapt to new normals all the time. And they come out all the time, and we're told very, very straight today by, again, mainstream media and important people, etc., that you know very well, that they come out and tell you what to believe about certain things, right down to sexual orientations and everything else. And when governments are involved in this kind of morality, altering moralities and behavior modification on the general population, that's not what government was ever there for. Hope you understand that. That's not the purpose of government. But they've taken it upon themselves, because you're living in a strange kind of system that pretends it's democratic but isn't at all. There are not stupid people running this at the top. And they have the best brains they can possibly employ or purchase or buy, working in the top think tanks to bring all of this in every little facet of it. And they also go through all the different things that could possibly go wrong with it, or reactions from the public and ways to get around that too. And Plato also said that, you know, that drama was a powerful tool, because the people emulate what they see on stage. And even music, he wanted to have license. He says it had a tremendous power to influence the youth. And it certainly does, because they've used it to the maximum in my lifetime alone. And I've seen the changes. I know the techniques that are used in music, and why the beat is the way the beat is, and why they brought in strobes. And I've also gone through the group that brought it out, the bunch that brought it out, were all ex-military guys, brought out rock music, pop music, and strobe lighting. And how they had meetings, because they were given hangars by the Air Force to practice these strobes in and try the music and all the rest of it, and given millions of LSD to distribute on their trips around the country. And you think you're living through it. Each generation thinks this is my generation, and you're making all the decisions to be cool. And you didn't decide anything for yourself at all. It was all handed to you on a plate, right up to the present time. Rip the present time. Plato also said, he said, it's the music industry and the fashion industry are very important. Fashion industry, he said that 2,300 years ago. Your whole culture is given to you. And it's upgraded and changed enough into the next part, the next part, the next part, when those who own the world want it that way.
But I'm just showing you that you understand. I mentioned before that right before 9/11 happened in 2001, there was an international conference of the so-called, what you thought were your censor bureaus for your media and entertainment. At least that's what the people presume. People presume everything, don't they? We just take everything for granted. And it turned out that your censor bureaus were actually getting together to see how to push the envelope further, and how what they've been pushing up until then had gone over with the public. Were the public ready for the next step? You understand, in the act of creating a debauched society, debased debauched society, it's incremental as to what you accept. And once you accept one little thing, you'll accept the next bit more, much quicker and easier. Until you're feasting. It's interesting, you're feasting on television and movies and even plays for television. And everyone says, you know, I guess you the warning at the start, for adults, we'll use profanity, nudity, and violence. So we're living on we're living on this stuff. We gorge it up, don't we? Because, you see, it's like any drug. And this is what Freud knew too. This is why they taught these techniques to Bernard, and he went on his way to promote it through the culture. That sex and violence can be linked together. You can stimulate one or the other and literally alter the behavior and even the thinking patterns and the way they behave and react and even to converse with each other through specific, well-known and very, very ancient techniques. So it's no coincidence, as I say, when they get a blitz, but at that meeting at 2001, they said that the public had accepted gay stuff and so on, and lesbian stuff and all the rest of it. Now it was time to push the envelope for bestiality and what they called intergenerational sex. That's what Mitra means by that. He doesn't call it pedophilia. They want to call it intergenerational sex. And that's when you had the blitz of all this kind of stuff coming out gradually, actually quickly. I'd already had the especially comedies to go for television series. And they've even had some bestiality in comedies now. So nothing surprises me, because you see, they tell you what they're going to do if you just read the little bits and remember what they're publishing in newspaper articles. In order to bring in the new, you must completely destroy the old. And I've, just in my lifetime alone, I've seen incredible changes in the culture. None of it came from the grassroots and for the people. It all came from the top. Plato himself said, you use drama. Drama, the stage, was so important. Now it's just entertainment on television. He said, Plato even said that the drama and the, he called it the fashion industry, if you translate it from the Greek, and music works together. They knew this in ancient times. It was a science then. And he said, too, that you couldn't allow grassroots anything from the cultural to change the culture, because those in control could lose control, could have ripple effects. So all the changes in culture were always authorized and promoted top down to the public. Nothing has changed in that respect at all. The techniques perhaps are better, because you truly think that people since the 50s especially, people have been trained to believe that all culture and even music is coming from the youngsters. Well, they shove youngsters in front of you, but you don't see in the studios, you don't see the managers, and you don't see the groups that the managers belong to and what they promote and tell them they're going to sing. I've seen youngsters go into a studio with some innocent little song, the usual sort of boy-girl stuff that teenagers go through, and by the time they're finished with it in the studio, it might be a hit, but they'll make it into a hit, but it'll end up with a lot of disgusting stuff in it. Disgusting stuff. Remember, there's a gangster rapper came out of the system because he almost died a few times with drugs and various other things. And he said that. He says, you know, he'd walk into the studio with the little basically poetry. And then would come the big boys, with the eyes that stare right through you, you know. And they'd rewrite everything until it was kill cops and do this and do that and, you know, blah, 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 blah. That's what would come out in the songs. Even in the music industry, it's probably more perfected there because they've always understood this. Read Plato when he talks about culture. Read what he says about drama and how important it was for the elite to bring in certain drama, traveling drama teams, stage actors with their plays, because the public would emulate what they saw on stage. They'd dress in the fashions that they saw the women wearing. And the guys too. They would also emulate their heroes on stage. And coupled with music, as Plato said, music itself was such a very powerful tool, because it doesn't just use auditory, it uses visualization along with this other thing, the music. It comes from the muse. You have to look at the Greek muses, understand the techniques. Behind all ancient, even, stories and mythologies, there's techniques being shown to you if you understand what you're looking at. So look at the muses. If you understand the muses, you can control society, and many people down through the ages came to understand that same thing. And Bernays definitely was taught in these techniques. Music is so powerful that Plato wanted to license musicians because of the effect it could have on the youth. It could cause rebellions if they wanted to. Well, once you understand that, you can also get students and young people to rebel at what you want them to rebel about. See, that's the real technique of it. Most of those things which we rebel about are given to us. And the government's only so happy to start parroting those points of views back to you. So you feel even more powerful, like they're listening. But if the government is listening to you and parroting it back to you, like the whole global warming agenda, save the planet, go green, and so on, put out there by the big NGOs, then it's because the government wants you to do that. That's why. You're demanding what they want you to demand. So who gave this idea to you in the first place? It's never a simple grassroots person. Never, ever, ever. None of them are at the top of these NGOs. And they're all funded, as I say, by the big foundations. Yeah, so you've got to understand, they give us the stars, and I've seen how they pick some of them, and they'll actually have drawings of their height. They'll even have the outfits they have to wear for their gimmickry, or their shtick, as they call it. And even the songs for the first few hits will be written up in advance, and they pick them out of a lineup. It's all done by very older, much older people in the backgrounds who wear tweed suits and ties, male and female. And the guys just step into the suits, and that's their role. I've seen it actually happen. Yeah.
It just seems amazing how you just seem to step into.
Yeah.
It just seems like that. I don't know.
That's how the culture industry really works, and it's all.
Yeah.
They sit around boards. These are older people because they design the culture for the future, and it's all programming. Everything you like, in fact, especially music, because you'll tap away, you'll whistle, you're almost absorbing the words in a subconscious level that stick there. But you don't really reflect till later what it actually says.
Yeah, and you do get absorbed in it, and you don't really question why. Mm-hmm. You like it so much.
That's right. It's perfect. Even Plato talked about that. He wanted to license musicians because of the power they could extend over the youth.
Mm-hmm.
Old sciences.
Disc 2, part 5,
mm-hmm.
Actually Jackie recorded yours and her conversation, sort of private conversation.
Oh, yeah.
It was very interesting where you ended up talking about how everything is a front.
Yeah.
And I think people need to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you expand on that? I know that's kind of off topic, but can you just tell people how, you know, even Plato said, even Plato was a front?
Oh, yeah, even Plato was, absolutely, he was a front. I mean, he studied under Socrates and sort of Aristotle, and they did the dialectic between them. One went one way, one went the other, And Plato skipped town, basically, when Socrates and his pals were being arrested, because he was implicated in the revolution, and it really, Socrates really was convicted of trying to get the youth to have a revolution and bring in a new system once again, where the intelligentsia, the scientific elite, you might say, of their day, would have the right to rule over the general public in an ordered society, exactly like what's happening today. And Plato himself was a front man, a mouthpiece, you might say, for obviously very even wiser men above himself. Not only that, these characters wrote so much, you couldn't do it all by yourself. They wrote screeds and screeds of stuff. There had to be teams working behind them, just like there are today with the biggest authors out there. It's the same system. You have to go back into the religions down through the ages and the accompanying religions that always accompany them. Often termed too vaguely as mystery religions, and we'll go, ooh, and we're scared, and we're intrigued, and so on. But there have always been fraternities down through the ages that carry forth ideas. Plato was a member. He writes in his own books that he was a member of these sects. He studied in Egypt. That's where he was taught. His mentor was given hemlock for supposedly stirring up the young for revolution. Revolution. Through revolution, to get their way. And Plato talked about a utopia for his own class, the intellectual elite, where they wouldn't have to maintain their own property. The state would maintain it for them. So he'd have an abolition of private property. Having private property himself, he said, was a problem. You have to repair stuff, keep it up, the upkeep of it. Replace stolen goods, fix things that break. Why not get those that you rule over to do it for you? And you're living a life of luxury. But all the peasants below wouldn't have the same life of luxury. So this same theme has come down through the ages. Wells himself said that Plato was his favorite author. And the book, his favorite book, was The Republic by Plato. With Matt from California on the line, and going through this business in school to do with critical thinking and logic. Now, last week I'd read an article from a British newspaper, because in Britain they're doing away with much of the higher understandings of reading and writing and spelling and all the rest of it, and geography and history has all been put away, and they're going to get taught social responsibility, in other words, political correctness for the upcoming societies. And it's all worked out in classroom with groupthink, and they have types of shunning the person who doesn't go along with it until you conform. So they use peer pressure to make everyone go along. And getting back to critical reasoning and thinking and so on, the ancient philosophers in Greece, especially when it comes to guys like Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, who were both students of Socrates, Socrates, remember, was condemned. And a big to-do is made concerning the fact these unjust people basically ordered him to drink the hemlock. But the charge really was that he was corrupting the youth. And we've got to go even back further to Pythagoras, who had his school burnt down after coming, as they all did, from Egypt with this philosophy. They went back to their homelands after getting taught in Egypt through the mysteries. And wherever they went, they were really fomenting a type of revolution. And even when Socrates drank the hemlock, Plato took off for quite a few years to get out of the country in case he was brought in amongst it too. And they say Socrates was condemned for corrupting the youth. What he was doing was training them and training young ones to disobey their parents and actually create a new type of society. A new type of society, again, along a new type of elitist agenda. And this carried on down through the ages. You find the same with Aristotle. He went off and became the mentor for Alexander the Great and helped him go off and encouraged him to go off and conquer the world and create a big empire. And so these guys all had missions. And philosophers, you see, philosopher kings had missions to accomplish. And they taught in two styles. Like, everything's taught with esoteric for the high initiates and for exoteric for the majority of people, same with Bibles and all the rest of it. That's how everything's written. And most folk reading the writings of these philosophers follow the exoteric, which is written in a fascinating enough style to make you picture the scenes they're depicting and so on, but you're not getting the real story. In the esoteric traditions, they're actually encouraging and looking for the perfect students. A pupil is called a pupil because you're the pupil of the eye. And it's the eye of Ra that came from Egypt, you see. That's why you're called a pupil. And the good pupils can see. You can see with the third eye, which is the mind. They use their mind. Most people do not. They simply learn by rote. And they don't use critical thinking and logic. But those who attended the schools in Greece, which were not compulsory, it was the word school, scholar comes in Greek from leisure. So only a leisured class, an elite, wealthy, leisured class, could wander around and wander in and out of school whenever they wanted to. They had nothing else to do. But those who were the right pupils were taught into the esoteric understanding of how to use logic to get other people on your side or behind you, even as an army. Because you could convince them by using their mindset, their logic. You understand their programming, you understand the language, just like a computer, and you can bring them step by step to a preordained conclusion which you designed in advance. Do you understand? Are you still there, Matt?
Yeah, I understand. Do you think a method of reasoning, I'm sure you've heard of Bloom's hierarchy?
Yeah.
Thinking, do you think that is a kind of a good guideline for getting students to think for themselves?
It could be. There was one book, it was called, if you can get a hold of it, I read it years ago, and it was called Straight and Crooked Thinking, and I can't remember the author's name. But it was a fascinating book. It really did show you how most people view famous people. Mm-hmm. It went through examples of people in a Hyde Park who would get up on a soapbox and say that what appears to be the most outrageous things, dressed in rags. But you could dress that same man up who gets laughed at in the park, give him a build-up in the media, tell him he's a genius, and put letters behind his name, dress him up in great suits and so on, and thousands will turn out and listen to the same speech from the same guy, and they'll be parroting everything he says as though it was a holy word. We're taught who to follow and who not to follow. It's not what they say, it's how famous they are.
I see.
And that's why they use media stars to say simplistic things to the public, and we follow the stars.
We don't question it.
We don't question.
Right.
We have cults of worship for the stars. So they give us the stars, and that's why they get involved in politics and speak on behalf of people. Well, if so-and-so says it and they're rich and famous, then I'll take that opinion. Or that's good enough for me.
I see. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I think it's by Robert H. Tholess is the author, T-H-O-U-L-E-S-S.
I'll search for it right now. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye.
Yeah, we live in such a world of deception, but these are really old sciences, very old sciences, and it's all sciences of the mind. Remember, I keep telling people to go back into ancient philosophy, because when you read the writings of many of the philosophers and guys, especially like Plato, they lay down a line on how culture is created and updated by the elite. And he said that it all must be authorized from the top down. They won't allow anything to come from the grassroots because it would upset their whole plan and their control over everything. So whatever is put into culture is planned from the top and disseminated down to you. And you simply adopt it into your life and it becomes part of your culture, whether it's fashion or behavior, music, whatever, or even topics of conversation, like this nonsense with the carbon footprint. And I wonder how much they'll tax Bigfoot on that one, eh? But this is the kind of nonsense we're fed, and people simply repeat it. Remember, Russell says repetition is so important.
My other question is, I had heard you mention one time about the global elite or aristocracy, they have the belief in reincarnation, but only for them.
Yeah, they have an odd. You understand that all religions have an esoteric side, and each side can be misinterpreted even by those that follow them. And so even the Greek themselves claim that they are man. We are not man. We are human. And human comes from humus, meaning the earth. That's the whole story of Adam. Before Adam was created in Genesis, you'll see that God created man and woman in chapter 1, then it's the last you hear of them. And then he says, no, there was no one to till the soil, so he created Adam and Eve. They were the workers. So these characters at the top believe that they have spirit, and the rest of the public down below do not. That's the difference.
Oh, so they believe that they have spirits that will go on to live another life and being reincarnated and all these things, but the rest of us,
If you read the books by Plato, he being an aristocrat of his day and studying in Egypt, he believed this himself, and he wrote about it in his books.
Plato?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so the inferior ones like us, we don't have souls.
Well, you have a soul. See, in ancient times, and this was even taught in the early Christian church, you had body, soul, and spirit. And if you had all three, that was completion. That was the ultimate trinity. But they claimed that the people at the bottom never achieved or acquired spirit, so they were just soul. The soul had no intellect of its own, and you just went back into the big sea of pea soup and got mushed up.
I see. Oh, that's pretty wild.
And that's what Plato attributed their superior intellect and knowledge, and for the very fact they were aristocratic and successful, that's what he attributed that to, was that they came from these lineages that had spirit.
So they go on and evolve, but the rest of us go back into the primordial soup.
That's it, yeah.
That's pretty wild.
Isn't it, yeah?
All right, thanks, Alan.
Thanks for calling.
From myself, Alan Ward, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.